happy you're here. I'm sorry for the delay. We got running a little bit behind on our 10:30 docket. We appreciate your patience. We have one case on the 10:30 docket, Premier Trailer Leasing versus GTR Rental. And if our clerk will please announce counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Brian O'Shea to argue for appellant and Mr. Scott Hayes to argue for appellee.
Counsel?
May it please the court. My name is Brian O'Shea. My co-counsel is Mike Truesdale, and we represent Premier Trailer Leasing, Inc. Premier is a privately held Delaware corporation with its national headquarters in Grapevine, Texas, out by the airport. The appellee is GTR Rental, LLC, formerly known as City Capital Trailer Rental, Inc. And in a nutshell, this is Premier's case. GTR is a direct competitor of Premier. And GTR has a judgment against a man who owns some shares of stock in Premier. The man's name is John Dalcanton. He owns less than 2% of the outstanding shares of Premier. Based on that judgment, GTR obtained a turnover order requiring Premier to pay GTR any future dividends on Dalcanton's shares, and then also to provide GTR with shareholder notices and access to Premier's private financial information as if GTR were a shareholder of Premier. Effectively, what the turnover does is transfer Dalcanton's shareholder rights to GTR. And it accomplished this transfer in spite of a shareholders agreement that all of the shareholders of Premier entered into, as well as the corporation, which restricted the transfer of the shares themselves and also specifically restricted the transfer of any shareholder rights. And it is our position that the turnover was not authorized by the Texas turnover statute, and that the entry of the order was an abuse of discretion based on a failure to properly analyze or apply the controlling principles of law. And the controlling principles of law are three. The first principle that controls this case is this court's decision in Dale versus Finance America, a case that has been featured promptly in the briefings. The rule in Dale is that for a turnover order to issue against a non-judgment debtor, it must concern property owned by the judgment debtor and subject to the judgment debtor's control. Now, in this case, the shareholder rights that were being transferred were not subject to the shareholders, to Mr. Dalcanton's control, because of the shareholders' agreement, which restricted the transfer of shareholder rights. The second principle which controls this case is the principle that the turnover statute is purely procedural and does not provide for the determination of the substantive rights of third parties. In this case, the substantive rights of third parties that were affected or implicated by the turnover statute were the parties, the shareholders, and the corporation, the parties to the shareholders' agreement. They had a contractual right to expect that Mr. Dalcanton's shareholder rights would not be transferred to a third party, much less to a competitor, and so the turnover order implicated their rights, violating the rule that's outside the purview of the Texas turnover statute. And the third principle that applies in this case is the principle that turnover statutes are in the nature of mandatory injunctions and requires that such orders must be definite, clear, precise, and inform the person being ordered of the acts he is required to do without calling on him for inferences or conclusions about which reasonable persons might differ and without leaving anything for further hearing. And that principle goes to the scope of the turnover order as it pertains to the information that Premier is required to provide to GTR. It's any financial information to which Mr. Dow Canton was entitled as a shareholder, as if he were a shareholder. And then the court went in and put certain qualifications on that, and I have submitted an exhibit, an oral argument exhibit, which sets forth the portion of the findings of fact and conclusions of law, which in it, the italicized part appears both in the order and in the findings of fact and conclusions of law, and even the appellees took the position that in this the court was trying to refine the order, and it's our position that the way he set it up is that any request for information that's made requires Premier to go through a series of questions. Does the information requested, first of all, could a shareholder ask for that information? And it's unclear whether he's trying to incorporate by reference the Delaware corporate code as to shareholder rights and requesting information, but that's the first decision. Then decision, does this relate to this equal treatment issue? The third point would be, is it a confidential trade secret? And then the third point is with information given to the banks. It's unclear there. Is he saying that we have to give that to them, even if it is confidential information and even if it has nothing to do with equal treatment? And the point is that it's impossible to comply with this without making a series of inferences and decisions going through. And the relief we're requesting is that the entire turnover order as it pertains to Premier be reversed on the basis of the first two principles that I recited, the rule in Dale and the rule about the substantive rights of third parties. And alternatively, the relief we're requesting is that the portion of the turnover order dealing with the information and notices that we're required to provide be reversed on the basis of the third principle and presumably remanded for further clarification. And if the court does reverse, the court will not have to get to the trade secret issue that we raised in the briefs, but I do want to point out that the court at least implicitly did make a finding that the universe of all financial information of Premier did include confidential trade secret information. When in his findings of fact, after the initial order had been entered, and we said, Judge, that is so broad, it has to include confidential trade secrets. He went back in the findings of fact and put in a provision saying, when they're asking for financial information, confidential trade secret information is not subject to discovery. So I think at least implicitly, he was recognizing that the universe of all financial information of a privately held company has to include some trade secret information, especially when it's your competitor who's asking for the information. In a nutshell, that's my case. And a little more detail on the background. I think it's important. This case is so different than most of the turnover cases that you read. And one way that it's different is that Premier was in no way involved in this dispute between GTR and Dow Canton. And based on the judgment that was filed, it appears that Mr. Dow Canton was an employee of GTR. And I say that because in the judgment that is filed, that there's claims for a breach of a separation agreement and breach of fiduciary duty, and I'm just speculating, but it looks like this was an employer-employee dispute, and Premier had absolutely nothing to do with it. And another way this is different than what you see in a lot of the turnover cases is that there's no accusation of any complicity between Premier and Mr. Dow Canton to try to keep anything from GTR. And in fact, the record is very clear that when this was before the trial court, that Premier took the position that even though we think this whole turnover procedure is you're riding the wrong horse, this is not the way to go about it, and we think we have no legal obligation to do it. If there are any dividends, we'll figure out a way to get to you. We don't care about that. What we care about is this thing about us giving you all our financial information. So we'll figure out how to get the money. And if you've got real concerns Let's get an independent person to look at the financial records. And they refused, they refused that proposal. And interestingly, they have never given an explanation as to why that proposal would not meet their needs. They said they never said it in the trial court, and all the briefing that's been done for this court, and we've been pounding on this, and they've never come up and said, this is why we rebuffed that. And they've also never given an explanation as to what financial information do you want? What tell us, rather than all financial information, give us categories. They've never once articulated what type of financial records they want to look at and why. And, Your Honor, I'd submit the reason that they haven't done that is because it's not about the money with them either. Is what they want is they want to hang on to this right to basically be a quasi-shareholder of one of their competitors and be able to get a look into their private financial records. And in the final analysis, that's what this case is about. With respect to this court's, and again, on this, Your Honor, there was this issue about generally can turnover orders issue against non-judgment debtors. And again, we don't have to reach that. I know this court has come down where it has and said, yes, it can if the property being turned over is owned by the judgment debtor and subject to his control. So on the basis of that case is what I'm asking you to rule. And again, that the property that is the subject of the turnover was not subject to his control because of the shareholders agreement. Now, the logic of Dale is that if the property that the third party has is actually owned by the judgment debtor and controlled by the judgment debtor, then if the judgment debtor was doing the right thing, he could go get that property and deliver it to the judgment creditor. So when the court's ordering that third party to deliver it, all he's ordered him to do is what the judgment debtor should have done, and it's in no way affecting that third party's rights because the judgment debtor owns and controls that property. And the corollary to the rule in Dale is this principle about substantive rights. If it does affect that third person's substantive rights, then you're outside of the turnover statute, and that's exactly what happened here. This isn't a situation where you can order the transfer of these rights and it's no harm, no foul. That these people have very real contractual rights that are being affected by this order. Your Honor, one thing I want to point out is with the turnover, well, I'll back up. And I think it's clear from the record that what the court was doing was transferring rights. And really, the court did three things in the order. With Mr. Dow, that one order went to Mr. Dow Canton, and the court said, you know, Mr. Dow Canton, if you receive any dividends or distributions, you pay them over. And that finding is not on appeal, but it is significant because even if this court strikes down the turnover order as it pertains to Premier, the order will still be in place as to Mr. Dow Canton. He'll have to pay them. And one thing is that there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Dow Canton has not been cooperating or is trying to hide his assets or is trying to hide from his creditors. None of that is in the record. In fact, the only thing in the record is that he's been very cooperative. They know where he is. They served him. He showed up at court with an attorney. He was very cooperative. So even if we strike down turnover order as to Premier, it will still be in effect as to Mr. Dow Canton.
Mr. O'Shea, what is the consequence for the violation of the confidentiality order if there was a violation by Mr. Dow Canton? What happens if he violates the confidentiality order?
The confidentiality order or the turnover order? Okay.
Between the shareholders and the corporation. What's the penalty for violating that confidentiality agreement?
I'm confused, Your Honor. Are you talking about the shareholders agreement?
Yeah, shareholders agreement.
Your Honor, I would have to check. I don't know if there's a liquidated damages provision in the contract or if it would be a situation where you would have to prove up your damages. They'd have a claim for breach of contract.
My concern was whether that was before the trial court.
No, it was not.
How about, was there any evidence presented to the trial court about the law of the state of Delaware dealing with the rights of a shareholder in a Delaware corporation to obtain financial information?
Well, Your Honor, there was no evidence in the record, but I am aware of what the law in Delaware
right,
is.
Too, but I'm asking if it's in the record.
It is not.
Thank you,
and I see my time is up, so.
May it please the court. My name is Scott Hayes, representing GTR Rental LLC, the appellee in this case. As the court is aware, in February of this year, the appellants had filed a mandamus proceeding on the issues that are being discussed today. That mandamus proceeding was denied. Just a few additional facts. The judgment that my client has against Mr. Dal Canton was back in 2005. Jury trial where there's a $1.2 million judgment which included a fraud finding. That judgment until now, even at this point, has been totally uncollected. The turnover statute in Texas is designed for, I guess, easy cases as well as cases where the usual and normal procedures to collect on a judgment are not successful. And the statute speaks to several of the issues they brought up that I'll go into farther, but the statute allows the collection, attachment, et cetera, of both present and future rights to property of the judgment debtor. And there was also discussion about the documents in 31.02b1. The statute specifically provides that the documents and records related to the property sought to be turned over is something that must be turned over and is discoverable. So the statute speaks to both the issue of what can be sought as well as documents relating to that. The initial issue was the appropriateness of the turnover order as to third parties. The Supreme Court in the Schultz case has stated that you can reach third parties. This court's aware, both in its case in Dale back in 95, I believe, where significantly writ was denied in that case. Also in In re Watson about 5 years ago, the court also specifically said that turnover orders can reach third parties, and appears today that general proposition may have been conceded by appellant, but the argument that, okay, it's only limited to assets subject to debtor's possession or control. In this instance, the future distribution dividend rights from the appellant are what are sought. And again, the 31.02 in A specifically said the turnover statute reaches present and future rights to property. So under the cases and the statute, reaching a third party is appropriate as well as reaching future distributions or dividends. And again, the statute set up difficult ways to go get this. And this is a situation perfect for this statute. It's not the typical execution collection methods are not appropriate. They also contend that the substantive rights are being affected here. Well, number one, the payment of distributions or dividends certainly is not affecting the substantive rights. And in previous arguments, the appellants have said, you know, the issue really is not paying the money as it becomes due. So how that could be a substantive right affected some way in the shareholder agreement by some type of Delaware law is unknown to me. And additionally, the turnover statute specifically provides that documents relating to that can be provided. And as the record shows, the trial court judge was very diligent and thoroughly thought through this, considered this. We actually had two hearings. He had an initial order and then a modified order that relates to specifically the documents that are being provided. And
what financial information is it you want?
The financial information that would provide to my client showing that if distributions are made, are likely to be made, are made to some shareholders and not others, and generally documents that would be available.
Distribution documents indicating distributions made to all shareholders. Good?
That would be.
Why do you need anything else?
Well, there may be documents that show distributions or some type of payment that may be, you know, a bonus to Mr. Dalcanton that now is not, that's going to be wages and not some sort of distribution or dividend. But I think the court narrowed down specifically what that does not include. And
but it doesn't narrow it to what it does include.
Well,
to any financial information. I mean, you're going to know their profit and loss. You're going to know if you're, do you agree they're a competitor? Y'all are competitors?
Well, we would dispute the evidence at the time. Generally, in a broad scope, we may be competitors. I think
so
that
you're going to know if they're making a profit or not. You're going to know if it looks like they're going to have to lower their prices or raise their prices or whatever because of the money they're making or not making, which is totally unrelated, I assume, if you have the information of everybody that's going to get a distribution or a bonus or a salary.
Well, again, as we read the order, the documents that he would be entitled to as a shareholder, then excluding, you know, a broad array of documents, marketing materials, price list, customer identity, product identity, and availability, that are categories of documents under this order that we specifically do not get.
The turnover statute authorizes the turnover of things that have value. I mean, it's to satisfy a judgment.
Yes.
And so how does any of this financial information at all have anything to do with satisfying a judgment? I mean, really, you're entitled to money, the distribution that would have been going to Mr. Dalcon. I'm not seeing how this financial information satisfies in any aspect the judgment.
Well, number one, Mr. Dalcanton, as I've stated previously, we had a fraud finding. So I think there's obviously, and the judge addressed this in what he was looking at, is that there must be, you know, a closed corporation. There must be enough information provided for us to be able to determine if something's going on where distributions are made to some shareholders, not other shareholders, or the characterization of payments has now gone from distribution to bonus, salary, something that may not qualify as receiving money here. And he recognized that particular issue. And second, again, the statute, you know, specifically speaks to documents related to that property and that interest. In this case, is future money that when there's going to be a payout.
But the fraud finding was against Dalcanton.
Correct.
Not having anything.
Correct.
To do
with absolutely with that. Correct.
So how does not receiving any information related to any asset received by Mr. Dalcanton, how does that not satisfy what you want? I mean, you're assuming chicanery on the part of this business, that they're going to hide something or give it to the other stockholders or something, and there's no evidence of chicanery, as you just told us. So what's the matter with just getting every document indicating any asset whatsoever given to Mr. Dalcanton? Then you know what he got, so you can get it, because you're entitled to it.
Well, I agree with that, that we certainly should get that, but then the other issue would be that if there are other distributions that are paid to other shareholders, again,
you're not entitled to it.
Well, we believe to be able to satisfy this, comply with the order, and be able to get the distributions that he would be entitled to, it's more information than just what he's being paid and not paid.
So you're using the turnover order, the turnover statute for discovery?
Well, we're using the language in the turnover statute that says that documents related to the property, you can also get that. And as the trial court found and stated in the record, that this was to assist in the collection of this amount through the turnover order, that we get certain information. Again, he excluded large parts of information. Additionally, he also stated in the record that, you know, if there's some issue with this that comes up, bring it back to me. If they have some issue with documents, submit it in camera to the trial court judge. He then can make that determination. Also, as the court's aware, there was in 2008, about a year before this order was entered, there was an agreed confidentiality order that was signed and submitted to the court that affects the appellant and affects my client and puts a confidentiality order on whatever information is provided to them.
So, since you're the competitor, I'm sure their confidentiality order is a great comfort to you, since it's been disclosed to their competitor.
Well, again, Your Honor, that the in almost every situation that a court-ordered confidentiality agreement is used throughout discovery. And, again, that a violation by our client of that would subject it to contempt.
Well, Mr. Pace, yes. Confidentiality order we normally see is a matter between trial counsel that says we'll share this between trial counsel and we're just not going to tell the third party about it. In this situation, if you're sharing, if the information that's shared is private information dealing with the operation of a private corporation and its financial affairs, there's not any third party you need to share it with in order to do harm to the entity furnishing the information. In other words, you don't require a third party here to be furnished the information in order for there to be harm for the providing of the private financial information of your competitor company. You agree with that?
I would agree with that, but the flip side is you have a court order in place that, you know, subject to the penalty of contempt, and again,
that's what we're dealing with here.
Okay. Now,
what about the proposition that in the court's findings of fact that the certificates that Mr. Dow Canton owned have been delivered to GTR, your client, and that you're in possession of those certificates? Do you maintain that you're entitled to keep the possession of the certificates?
We are holding the certificates. We are not the owner. If it's not a formal pledge, but at this point he can't go transfer that ownership.
Yeah, but you have a collateral interest in the certificates and that you have a judgment that you have asserted that you're entitled to possess and hold, at least not own, those stock certificates in terms of your efforts to collect your $1.2 million judgment. Is that right?
I would say it's being held to prevent him from transferring that if that issue comes up, and that will be addressed. We have no rights by our holding of it.
We just want to get the money that the certificates represent in the form of dividends or any other way. If those certificates were the subject of a buyback in terms of some corporate action activity with a merger or anything else that's going on with Premier, then you'd be entitled to the money that would have come in relation to that, those stock certificates, whatever they are, less than 2%.
Well, we're not the record owner. We're not the record holder. We would not get.
Yeah, I understand that. Mr. Pace, that's not what I'm talking about. My concern is that you're focusing, you appear to be focusing on the validity of the court order that gives you the right to get additional information about the property that you actually have possession of, which is the stock certificate. You've got those, don't you?
We have in our possession the stock certificate.
Is your concern that what might happen as far as Premier is concerned is that it takes some other action that would cause those stock certificates to be worthless?
No, our concern is they would take action that the distributions that other shareholders are receiving that in some way, based upon the knowledge that the money is going to go to us if it's paid to Mr. Dow Canton, there would be action taken by the company to avoid that payment in some way, and we have absolutely no way of knowing
that's that. That's the canary that Justice McCoy asked you about a moment ago, right?
Right.
Now, what's your understanding on behalf of your client under the law of the state of Delaware, whether or not Mr. Dahlkamp is entitled to obtain financial information based on his status as a shareholder of the internal affairs of the company?
I do not have an understanding on that particular issue.
So we're arguing about something that might be there in case we ever looked at it. He might have a right if we ever look at the state of the law of Delaware to determine if he actually has a right or not.
Well, whatever that information that they're required to give the shareholders require able to get, then.
So if a request were made for information and the response was, Delaware law says we don't have to give it to you, are we past that kind of dispute in what the court's doing here with this particular order we're looking at today?
If that dispute were to arise, the individual to determine that dispute would be the trial court judge in this case.
And that's irrespective of the law of the state of Delaware or what's in the corporate agreements between the shareholder and the company?
Well, at that point, if those issues are addressed and briefed with the trial court judge, he can make that determination.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Hayes, you can have 1 minute to wrap up. Got interrupted at the end of your argument. My good questions on my behalf.
Thank you very much.
In any event, the trial court, as I stated previously, spent substantial time, looked at this particular issue, and tried to balance, in his discretion, balance the needs of the parties in this particular situation. We believe that effort and actions for the trial court were within his discretion. He excluded substantial items that would not be required to be produced. He invited and mentioned on the record, if there's issues with this, my order or the production, bring it back to me, which I think is entirely appropriate in this situation, that he be the one, if there is an issue that comes up in the future, to decide that, as opposed to, you know, going back and forth with this court to make, I guess, to read his mind on what he was going to do. So we believe that, number one, the turnover order as to the money is appropriate, should be affirmed. We believe the turnover order as to the production of the information is also appropriate, and that his order should be affirmed. Thank you.
Is Mr. Dahlkamp required to report in some form or fashion all remuneration he receives or whatever form or fashion? Whether he got $1 million bonus here, is he somehow required to inform them of that through turning over income tax returns or something? How would they know, for example, if he got $1 million bonus instead of a dividend?
And what I'm thinking is whether because the only thing I'm aware of is going on between Dahlkamp is what's gone in this action, and I know they've been fairly aggressive. So the answer is I don't know if they have anything in place, but it would seem to me that there would be mechanisms by which that they could keep tabs on. If nothing else, I think they could Well, I was thinking garnishment, but that'd really be a third person. But to answer your question, I don't know if there's any specific mechanism in place. just to go through some of the points, and the one that I want to focus on first is one that has troubled us all along. It was the point about some presumption of chicanery, because all of this has presumed, well, we need all this because they're going to be pulling all these tricks, and that's absolutely baseless. That's out of thin air. There's no reason to assume that this corporation has not done right by its shareholders and fair by its shareholders during its whole existence. So it's unfair to even make that implication. But I think it also speaks as to why we're so concerned, is that here we have our competitor, and basically what they're saying is, look, well, even though we've got no reason to do anything wrong, we basically want to go in and do some fishing and find out if there's any problems in there. And that's completely unfair. And it's got to remember, Premier has done nothing to forfeit its rights. It is an innocent party, and all it wants to do is, and it's trying to accommodate them, but it's never enough. And they're saying, no, we want to go in and do a fishing expedition, and that's why we had to draw the line and say, you know, that look, we made an offer and you rebuffed it and at great expense. You know, this has been at great expense fighting this thing to the company. And so now they're saying is, you know, look, no, that if you didn't want to play ball, that, you know, now, you know, you're going to have to get another route to get the dividends, because this route you're going on this turnover order is wrong. And that they point to the statute and they say, well, the statute says future rights to property. But it brings it back to this court's decision in Dale, is that even if future dividends is included in future rights to property, and there has not been that decision yet in the Texas courts. The closest it's been is where somebody had a structured annuity personal injury settlement, and that's a Daniels versus Pecan Valley case. And in that case, it was a vested interest. He owned the annuity, and it was scheduled payments. And there they said, yes, that is a vested right in property. So we don't even know if this is a future right of property. But even if it is, these prospective dividends, under Dale, you still have to prove that he's got the right to control. And here, under the shareholders' agreement, he does not have the right to control. That under the shareholders' agreement, he could not walk over there and say, look, I'm assigning you my future rights to dividends. That would be a breach of the shareholders' agreement and would affect the substantive rights of the other parties to the agreement. And so what we're asking court is that the court not only strike down the informational thing, but strike down the relief about having to pay the dividends directly to them. And when you strike that down, then the information thing will fall anyway. And I'd say the information has to go in either event, and we would also ask the court to strike down the provision relating to ordering Premier to pay the future dividends. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I've probably run out of gas here.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We appreciate your briefing in this case, and we appreciate your argument today. It's been very helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you will get an opinion from us in due course.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals.